Hi, everybody. This is Armand Demel with you with The Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and gifts. I like that. Help you lead a more positively minded life. Last week, 3 days on depression. 3 days, fascinating stuff. Newest stuff about depression. Just discovered there's a new surgery for depression. Just talking about what they can open up. I'll bring you that information shortly. They're doing a surgery for depression where they open it up and they put a little electronic thing in there that's battery operated, and they find out by stimulating that thing like a pacemaker, it keeps people from being depressed. Interesting science. Interesting. Well, you know, who knows? Who knows? Who knows what evil lurks in the heart of men? Who knows what evil lurks? You know, nowadays, there's a lot of focus on impulse control and lack of impulse control. Whenever you see theft, robbery, rape, we're talking about a lack of impulse control. We're usually talking about somebody who's doing something spontaneous. You know, sometimes they're planned, but the spontaneous ones are the interesting ones. It's where you get an idea and you follow the idea. Nowadays, a lot of focus is on teenagers and their lack of impulse control. This week, we're going to focus on impulse control in many forms, including aggression. Impulsive behaviors affect all of us in one way or another. Thousands of commercials and advertisements find their way into your psyche every day. Everywhere you go is something telling you, buy me, eat me, play with me. Everywhere you go, I'll be in a happy wrapper, red wrapper. You know, I'll be in a different color. I'll be attractive to you. I'll make you buy me at the checkout counter. You know, impulse control. We feed the impulses of other people. When you dress seductively to go meet somebody, you know, if you dress handsomely, let's say you're a single person and you're trying to attract the other people, the people of the same or opposite sex, whichever you prefer, and you put on that tight sweater, those tight jeans, that short skirt, that thing that's going to strike up the impulse in somebody else. What are you doing? We're hoping that their impulse will get them to follow through, to come over and say hello in some way. Impulses. We live on impulses. We love impulses, and we hate them. Because they could destroy you, because they could kill you. So trying to get you to buy a product, it's all advertising, is based on some kind of impulse thing. Imagine you trying to tell you about a car, and they show you this fast, beautiful car. That is a remake of last year's car, but we're going to do advertising that's going to make you stop into a store today and say, I want that car. Because we're going to do it 0% down and no payments until you're 99, right? And plus we'll give you a mail-in rebate of $6 million, right? Terrific. So how could you turn it down? Just sign on the dotted line. Oh, there is a little catch. Well, impulse control. Buying on impulse means you don't investigate too much. You know, we don't want to get all wrapped up in the details of it. So this week I'm going to take a closer look at impulsivity, what it is, why it is, and who it is. No. And is it a good thing or is it a bad thing? Is falling in love an act of impulsivity? Is that what it's about? Two lovers get in the mood, and they're sitting in a Starbucks, and they say, hey, let's go to the bathroom, and they go to the bathroom and make love. Is that impulse? Or impulsive or spontaneous? Is another question. Now, here's a question I have. Is buying of all candy in the world impulsive? Or do some people actually plan to buy a candy bar? Does somebody sit at home and say, I think I'll go buy a candy bar, and they get up and they go to a store where they have the very candy bar in mind, be it a Baby Ruth or a whatever it's going to be, a Hershey or something, and they They go to the store and they buy only that one. Hey, where do you keep your Baby Ruth? There it is, three shelves down on the right-hand side. I want a Baby Ruth. They don't buy it on impulse. They weren't coming out of the subway. They actually left their home to go buy candy. Well, I think very few do. Does anybody actually premeditate candy for immediate consumption? You know, you might plan to buy Halloween candy or Easter candy or Shabbos candy. All right. I'm pushing it. So if you want to understand impulses, our own and others, that's listening in today. That's what impulsivity is about. You know, it's about being spontaneous? Is that the same thing? What's the difference between impulsive and spontaneous? Here's another question. One scientist says the opposite of impulse is compulsive. The opposite of impulsivity is compulsivity. Think of that, compulsivity. You get the compulsive is loaded with systematic planning, going over things over and over and over again to the point of inaction, right? And the impulsive doesn't go over it at all. They just jump into it. Impulsivity is defined as a swift action without forethought or conscious judgment. Get that? Without forethought or conscious judgment. Or it could be defined as acting with less forethought than most individuals of equal ability and knowledge. Now, this is a very important thing. Because, you know, to your dog, if you throw food on the floor and he gobbles it down, it's impulsive, but it's not impulsive. That's what he does. If you put him with 20 other dogs, that's what they're all going to do. Is your dog impulsive? Or is he just doing what he does? So impulsivity is kind of based on what the other guy would do. If you're moving faster than everybody else and doing something beyond with less thought than your peers, it's called impulsivity. If you live in a prison, right? If you're in a prison, it's very different what impulse is there compared to what impulse is, you know, if you're out there in the streets. An example. Impulse traders. Impulse traders in Wall Street, there's a thing in stock market called impulse traders, and these are traders who buy and sell stocks faster than everybody else. Now, very often, they're very successful. The impulse trader will see something faster than his peers, and if he's successful, he will make more money than his peers. Because he's buying a stock before the other people recognize that they want it. So he's buying it before the price goes up. A different definition. Biopsychosocial definition of impulsivity says that you have, in your physiologically, you have a decreased sensitivity to the negative consequences of your behaviors. Think about that with people you know. Think about the people you know who have, you know, they don't have a pot to cook in, right? And they can't, and they're in debt. Why are they in debt? The credit card. What happens with the credit card? Impulsivity. Absolutely. What do you think credit card companies do? They want to sell to you who are impulsive. They don't want the planner. Somebody once told me that the worst credit card customer is the one who pays off the bill every month. See, they don't want that. They want the 20% interest they get from when you can't pay off the bill. Somebody who buys within their means is not impulsive. Somebody who buys outside of their means is impulsive. So credit card is meant for those of you who are impulsive, that's how we make our living, and we hate those of you that pay your bill. You think the credit card company would love you because you pay your bill on time? Oh, no. Please take your business elsewhere. We want the guy who doesn't pay on time because that's how we make our real money. So credit cards really feed the system, so it's a decreased sensitivity to the negative consequences. It's a biopsychosocial definition. You have something in your brain that doesn't allow you to see the consequences, and you have a rapid reaction to stimuli. You see, when you have a biological impulse, it's usually rapid stimuli. Something is stimulated, you know, something happens to you, you know, and boom, you've got to react to it in some way. Somebody whiffs something in front of you, you got to have it. Your nose tells you, give me that. Give me some. You see things if you're a visual type, you got to grab for it. Right? You smell something, you want to eat it. It's automatic. And what happens is you have to have fast stimuli. Now, very depressed people are not very often impulsive because everything's slowed down. See, if you're depressed, everything gets kind of slowed down. In fact, one of the things that is a positive about depression is that it slows down your impulsivity. If you're somebody who's impulsive, like a manic person, you've heard of manicism, manic depression. The manic depressive person in the manic disorder, the person who is manic, is always impulsive. They go on shopping sprees that are like everything. You know, it's like they just got a divorce and they still have their husband's credit card or something, or your wife's credit card. And you go out there and you spend like crazy, and you have no controls, no consequences for the future. And in a manic disorder, there is a definite chemical imbalance that is stopping you from seeing the long-term consequences of what you do. It's a chemical thing. Got it? And you can't see it, so I'll take that now. I'll buy that now. I'll have that now. I want that now. Where are you going to keep it? Oh, that's not a concern. I want to have it. Impulse buying and mania is a difficult combination because people usually get themselves in serious troubles. They get in debts, they need to be controlled by people who love them. Rapid, unplanned actions based on a combination of physical matters, like physical sensations, and the inner psyche dying to be free. Psychological subset that says to you, I need my freedom, is the perfect psychological subset for impulsivity. The person who says, I can't be penned in, an impulsive person. Now, psychiatrically, if you just tuned in, my friends, we're talking about impulsive behaviors. A very good subject nowadays, because they're looking at kids right and left and giving them Ritalin, and they're giving them drugs, and they're talking about ADD, and they're talking about ADHD, and they're talking about DND and all these other disorders that they have created for our children who have these disorders. I mean, they're now defined. What's the difference? Are they impulsive? Sure, they're impulsive. But the difference is between impulsivity and ADD is that the child with ADD doesn't necessarily have this go into their conduct. It's in their mind. Their mind is random. They're flipping all over the place with their minds. Their minds are going everywhere. When it's impulse, when it's behavior control, when they have conduct behavior disorder, that's where you get the link to impulsivity. See if that makes sense. When the conduct goes wrong, when your actual behaviors go wrong, it's not just an act of your mind. That's when we talk about impulse and impulse problems. So in personality disorders, there's what they call the antisocial personality. You've heard about them. A constant disregard and violation for the rights of others occurs at around age 15, usually, you know, an antisocial behavior, and could stay there forever. Antisocial behaviors are disregard, and therefore I'll do anything I feel because I disregard the rights of others. People who are impulsive, aggressive. People who are impulsively aggressive, right? And especially if they have an antisocial personality, they frequently have poor verbal skills. The ones who are the most impulsive in the prison settings are the ones who have the least verbal skills. They can't talk much. So they have to go for what they want. They have to grab it. Armand DeMille here with you with the Positive Mind every week. You know, we're here Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at 1 o'clock, but the program is available throughout the Internet, all over the world, day and night. Whenever you want to hear it, you can hear this now by going to thepositivemind.com and pressing on the magic button. And you just have that impulse and say, I think I'll hear that program today. Boom. It comes right to you. There's a thing called borderline personality disorder, known for its lack of boundaries. You know, a person with a borderline personality disorder is, they're kind of characterized by their lack of impulsiveness. They don't have any impulse control. And the main control they don't have is the control over their own boundaries and your boundaries. A person who has got a borderline personality disorder is all over you. They are invading. They are right. They're in your house. They're in your car. They're in, somehow they're leaving messages with your mother-in-law. Somehow borderline personality disorder feels no control and no inhibition about doing anything they feel like doing to get to you, if they want to get to you in some way. Of course, then there are, you know, if you think about other impulse controls, arsonists are very frequently people who lack impulse control. Even though you think of arson as something that's frequently planned out, it's not. There are more people who just light a match and set fire to something than there are people who make a plan to get the insurance by setting fire. So most cases of arson are impulse controls. And then there's a thing called the intermittent explosive disorder. Yes, intermittent explosive disorder, you must have seen it in somebody you love. They blow up. They just blow up. They explode. And it happens periodically. Suddenly, boom. And they are explosive, and they are screaming and yelling. But it happens intermittently. It's not all the time. That's another form of lack of impulse control. And then classically, there's another one called substance abuse. Yeah, probably more than any other. You know, the most evident sign of it is substance abuse. And any addict, no matter what kind of an addiction it is, whether it be substance, maybe it be alcoholism, whether it be narcotics or marijuana or sex, you know, even love addiction, if there is such a thing. But I think that you might, if you look at it closely, you'll see with a lot of love addicts, there's a lack of impulse control. Your girlfriend comes home, I met a guy, I fell in love. Right? I just saw him, I'm in love with him. Is a lack of control, is a lack of considering the long range. Yes, we slept together the first night. Lack of impulse control. Gotta have it, you know? Addiction. So addiction is clear lack of impulse control, and now here's what the case is. It turns out that children who have a conduct disorder, right, in their early years, meaning that they can't get along with other people, their conduct, not their thinking, not their schoolwork, but their behavior with other kids and with teachers is aggravating, annoying. They get in the face of people. They fight. Those are the kids most likely to go to substance abuse later in life, because it shows a sign of impulse control. And why is substance abuse such a good neighborhood for people who have impulse control? Because with substance abuse, you can control your impulses by taking something. Mind you, you're out of your mind. You feel nervous. You feel like a wreck, right? You take a Valium. Now, we're not talking about Valium as a substance, but it is a substance. You pop a Valium so that you can get out of that the havoc of your impulses. You've got to do something. You've got to do something. You feel really angry. You take a medication, right? And that medication could be anything from heroin to alcohol to Valium. It could be anything, you know. It could be any Librium. You could take any drug or tranquilizers. Something that moves you away from that feeling you have of being out of control. So children who have got a conduct disorder very likely can wind up with impulse disorders, and we're going to talk about this, and we're going to take your calls later, by the way. Today's one of those days when we will be hearing from you. Armand DeMille here. Now, impulsivity is not always bad. It is not a bad thing. It pays off in certain situations. It certainly has evolutionary benefits. So when life is short and dangerous, think back in time when, you know, life expectancy was 3 years. No, life expectancy, maybe, you know, 20 years old, 30 years old maybe. A while back with the early hominids. Resources are scarce. The people sitting around who don't have any impulses are kind of living on these scarce resources. And it's the one that gets up and goes outside and follows the impulse that's going to survive. Also, the one that gets up and goes outside is the one who's likely going to be taking on other people, being, you know, getting into fights and developing his or her strength. The one that gets out there is going to be meeting new mates and surviving that way. So the impulsivity is frequently rewarded, right, as a way of staying alive. And I think we have this in us. We have this, just think of the impulsive one versus the non-impulsive one. You know, you and your friend are running through the woods and a lion is chasing you and your buddy says, wait, let's think about what to do. And you don't wait. You grab a vine and you get away and your friend gets gobbled up while sitting on a rock thinking. The impulse control, the impulses are very important. Baboons and monkeys that are impulsive as adolescents often become dominant as adult baboons and monkeys. Get it? Now, there's a difference here, and this is the same with humans. The ones who become, who are young and become, have low impulse control, become dominant as long as they are moderate in their confrontational urges. This is the whole thing. It's like conduct disorders. You cannot use your impulses to have confrontations. Because in society, if you have confrontations, the odds are 50% are going to win and 50% are going to lose. And you could easily be, 50% of the people who are confrontational can easily be squelched. Because half win and half lose. And so if you control, if you're moderate in your confrontational urges, you're more likely to succeed if you are impulsive. So, for example, if you're in the business world and you're impulsive, somebody may see you as a go-getter, somebody may see you as a rainmaker. It's terrific, but you've got to be careful not to take on the bosses with confrontation. There are employees I know who say, I've got to be me. I've got to deal with the boss. I'm not going to let him treat me like a child. I've got to take him on. You know, this is a way of being. In fact, I'm told that in Germany, it's what people do all the time with each other, you know. Bosses take on their employees and the employees take on their bosses, but it's socially acceptable. But here in America, I don't see that so much. So if people want to get ahead, confronting their bosses is not the best idea. Nowhere here is it welcomed. Therefore, a key to staying out of trouble. If you stay out of trouble, you could turn your impulsivity into success. Stay out of trouble. If you're taking on people with your impulsivity, go get medication. No, go do something about it. Medication is not the answer. As far as I'm concerned, drink good water. Take the Majid Ali approach and drink a lot of water. You know what I mean? Calm down. Whatever you're going to do. Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. We're going to give you more information. Get ready for this. Self-regulation is partially based in a genetic variation. There is a gene, my friends. Yes, it's in your genes. A gene called MAOA. MAOA. MAOA, it's a gene. It directs the body to produce an enzyme which inhibits serotonin. Got it? Inhibits. Now, serotonin is your mood balancer. The more serotonin you got, and having regular serotonin and having it in balance keeps your mood going. Certain times of the month, certain women will have a drop in serotonin and their moods go out of whack. Right? Other times, men will have a drop in their serotonin, not as frequently as women do. Moods go out of whack. MAOA is the thing, that produces the enzyme which will negotiate with the serotonin. If you have more MAOA genes, you're less likely to have a natural level of serotonin and therefore be more likely to have a lack of impulse control. They're learning. MAOA, right? New genes. Therefore, imaging studies have now shown us that MAOA, the gene, is active and serotonin is reduced. If that happens, there is activity in one part of the brain is reduced. The part of the brain where the activity is reduced is the part that supervises deliberate behaviors. So that little ego control we have seems now to be linked to a certain part of the brain that seems to be linked to an MAOA gene marker. Now, here's the word for the day. You could write this down because you have to have a new word every day. Like I like, you know, French, because you could learn French for a day. You could get that online. I'm sure they have other languages. The activity is reduced in this part of the brain. It's a new word. The dorsal anterior cingulate. Yes, this is our word for the day. The dorsal anterior cingulate is part of the prefrontal cortex, my friends. Dorsal anterior cingulate. Now you meet somebody, and you're hot for them. You tell them, look, I've got very low activity in my dorsal anterior cingulate. You're kind of warning them that you might have a lack of impulse control. So, talking about genes, you know, MAOA, if you have too much of them, they find two people with high MAOA will conspire to do impulsive things. So blame your father for giving you these lack of impulse genes. You know, blame your mom. It comes down with the genes as well. So this is, we've worked very hard to learn about this information. And when we, it's a lot of stuff, isn't it? But I hope you learned a lot of stuff because I think it's very good information. I think we can look at impulsivity in a different kind of way. We're going to take a short break. After our break, we'll play a little music, bring you something a little interesting by Ben Harper, and then when we come back, we're going to take your phone calls at 212-209-2900. That's here. So we're going to take a short break right now. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Yo, this is Michael Franti from Spearhead. You're listening to non-commercial radio in New York. WBAI is a place to turn to.
Oh my God. And my mother got a sleeping suicide singing. Oh my God. And my mother got a sleeping genocide singing. Oh my God. My mother got a sleeping suicide singing. Oh my God.
TalkBack is your gathering place for the free and fair exchange of information and ideas, heard here Monday through Thursday from 3 until 5 in the afternoon. I'm Hugh Hamilton. Join me as we explore the issues and events making news across the nation and around the world with expert guests, insightful analysis, and, of course, your comments, questions, and observations. That's TalkBack right here on WBAI New York.
A prisoner, can't escape. You're a decision that I never make. Heard me laughing,
you heard me weeping, moan. When it's good, it's so, so good. When it's gone, it's gone.
you save me or leave me alone. Cause when it's good, it's so, so good. And when it's gone, it's gone. Oh, gone. Anything you can't deny, I could never be who we are. Oh, cause when it's good, it's so, so good. When it's gone, it's gone.
Ben Harper, H-A-R-P-E-R, when it's good. Ben Harper. When it's good, it's oh so good, and then it's gone. Oh, my God, how am I going to get more? Well, that's what happens when you are dealing with alcohol and drug addiction. You know, talk about plans. You know, people may not plan to get a candy, but they sure will plan to get their drugs. Part of the whole thing of drug addiction is the tension that goes around finding the drugs and where they are and getting the drugs from the person you get them from. You know, so if you go through, you know, having to go through the street corners and buy it from somebody. Amazing. Amazing how much gets involved in it. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. If you just tuned in, this is not WFUV, it is WBAI. And we are playing Ben Harper. And we're talking about living on impulse, playing hooky, disappearing for a weekend, having a fling, binge shopping like a Wall Street divorcee. Spontaneity can be a healthy defiance of routine, an expression of a starved desire. Yet, it is also a tendency to act or react with little thought, and has kind of appeared like an all-purpose plague. The people who are now recklessly doing their lives without consideration. And a lot of it, I think, has to do with the fact that you're able to get away with it more. In recent years, studies have linked impulsiveness to smoking cigarettes. The people who are the most impulsive tend to smoke the most. Now, that makes sense, doesn't it? Why does it make sense? Because you're not considering a long-range problem. See, and if that thing is inhibited in your brain, if you got MAOA running around up there in the prefrontal lagotomus, hey, I'm learning too, in your anterior cingulate, that's it. If you got it running around back there and, you know, wiping out your serotonin, it is very likely that you're going to have impulsive behaviors. So addiction, another sign of it, you know, addiction is it smoking, drinking, drug abuse? People who attempt suicide score highly on measures of impulsivity, as do adolescents with eating problems. aggression, compulsive gambling, severe personality disorders, attention deficit problems are all associated with high impulsiveness, a problem that affects an estimated 9% of Americans, according to a nationwide mental health survey completed last year. But I bet if you did that worldwide, it would drop down to like 2%. Because most of the adaptation of the world is to be depressed. You know, if you get through most of the world, you see a lot of depression, and depression controls impulsivity. But here in America, we kind of feed impulsivity. In fact, we like impulsivity. Not we, but them who sell you things like impulsivity, because they don't want you to question it too much. You know, I mean, if Consumers Union, Consumers Report, it's a good thing it's not a flashy magazine, because then you'd have to pick it up on impulse. But, you know, they're saying to you, here, let's weigh some of the factors. Well, people don't want to weigh the factors. They want to be able to pick up things and buy them and go on the Internet and just send your card over. Would you like your computer to remember these values for future reference, making it so easy for you to click that one button? Or Amazon, you know, with the iClick shopping. One-click shopping. Amazing. Oh, you want to hear some music today? You like Ben Harper? One-click. Boom. You know, you can have it by tomorrow. You can have it by tomorrow for an additional $472. Right? We'll just ship it to you tomorrow. And then you get this, plus you get your credit card out there, and you don't have to pay for it. Now you can pay for it in 97 years. We'll just charge you 20% a year, compounded. Until that time, so that the $20 you spent on the record eventually costs you $7,432,912, I think is the exact amount. So people who deal with credit cards and deal with impulsive buying, impulse driven. Now, does it mean that the more impulsive you are, the more likely you are to cheat on your spouse? Well, yeah. So them of you who are with impulsive people might consider, how did you meet them in the first place? Well, you met them on an impulse. They met you on an impulse, and maybe it's time to look at impulsivity a little closer. Maybe it's time to check it out in some kind of way. Well, we've got calls for you here today, 212-209-2900. We're going to take your calls. We're going to answer some of your questions, hopefully, and we're going to continue this theme throughout the week. So, although you may have been listening on impulse, you could plan, magic word, to listen to this program tomorrow. Roberta Atti is going to talk about impulsivity and aggressiveness, which we're going to focus on that issue, the confrontational issue. And then we'll also continue it on Thursday. Right now, my friends, this is your radio station. We're going to take one of your calls, 212-209-2900. Armand DeMille, let's say hello. Hi there, you're on the air.
Hello, Armand?
Yes.
How are you?
Good. Who is this?
Tony.
Hello, Tony.
All right. I definitely fit in there somewhere, you know, because when you said about the debt and all that stuff, I got into debt when I was 25, 30, and you would think that an adult would be able to foresee it, but it was like you said, it was like a blind spot, you know. It was like the day would never come when I would have to pay up, you know. And the thing that I've learned, or rather that I recollect the most, is that even as a child, I was not rebellious in a bad way, but I was rebellious. I didn't want to conform. And I think that's at the foundation of it all. I just didn't want to be, like you said earlier, I didn't want to be reined in. I didn't want to conform. I wanted to feel special, you know?
Yes, you wanted to feel special, but you couldn't. You know, one of the reasons why a lot of people don't want to feel special is because they would love to feel ordinary, but they can't. You know, like you said you didn't want to conform. Wouldn't it have been nice if you were okay and you're just one of the guys? Do you know what I mean? In other words, there's a part of you that wants to fight and wants to be different because you can't be the same.
Right.
Because you can't be successful being the same. So many people I know who are rebels wish they could be part of the family.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It definitely came from a place of insecurity, you know.
Yeah.
Because I remember, I mean, I've thought about this. And I remember being in class, being in sixth grade, fifth grade. I always got to sit in the back. I always had to sit in the corners, on the periphery, never in the middle.
Because you're a troublemaker. Oh, no, no, because you had to find an exit.
Yeah. As I look back, it was just, I just wanted to be different. I just, not different, rather, I wanted to stand out. And where does that come from? From a lack, you know, I guess I didn't feel good enough about myself at that time.
Well, how about nowadays, if you go on a subway or you pass by, do you ever make yourself invisible? Have you ever tried doing that? Is that your phone?
No.
Oh.
That's not mine.
Hi there. Do you ever stand out in any way? Do you ever make yourself invisible?
I don't. Well, I'm conscious of it now. You know, I don't have a problem being invisible, or I don't have a problem standing out, whatever the situation calls for.
That's a big difference. Huh? It's a big difference not being noticed. I remember one time, I took about 8 months off, and I was at a beach. And I was at a beach where nobody knew me by name. Now, this is at a time when I was a pretty popular guy. And people knew my name one way or another. But I was at a place where nobody knew me. And I was surprised that nobody knew me and how important it was that people knew me. I was surprised what it was like to be ordinary. And then I got into the comfort of it. Mm-hmm. Then I got into the beauty of it, what it's like to not have to be different, not have to be special.
Exactly.
But meanwhile, here comes the really big question, Tony. How about family? How about you and your current family? What do you got?
I'm divorced, and I have a wonderful family. I'm blessed. My family is very close, far from perfect, but very close.
Your wife. And what happened? What happened with your wife?
It's a long story.
Okay, see, now here's the story. Here's exactly what the story is that happens with impulse-driven people. People who have a history of impulse behavior and, you know, defiant kind of behavior in childhood, when they try to get into a marriage, they try to find a place where they can settle down. And they find it so hard to settle. Part of the disease about having impulsivity is that it's very difficult to form a long-term relationship with somebody. It's very, very hard. And I'm sure you must have learned that. Now, you could say, you could complain about the differences between you and your wife, or that she had this problem or that problem. The real thing was, it's hard to settle down. You know, and when it's hard to settle down, it's hard to be a mate to somebody.
I think, you know, again, it depends on the perspective, because I've been in two long relationships for almost 20 years. So in one aspect, they're not like 40-year relationships, but they were long-term relationships. But they both did end. And, you know, now I look at them more just as experiences that I've learned from, you know. But definitely they were challenging. There was a definite, it was, you know, day-to-day challenge.
I thank you very much for calling in, Tony. Thank you so much for your courage and your honesty.
Thank you.
Sure. You know, we've got a person here who does coaching. Her name is Dr. Christine Ulrich, and she's a professional coach. And what she does with people who are in debt is she systematically works with people who are in debt to try to get them to control the impulses that lead them to their debt-ridden behaviors. I mean, she really asks the question, and she has people even calling her. They do it by phone. So it's called coaching. 212-209-2900. We added it to our services because we said it was kind of essential. There are people who need psychological help, but there are people who need real hard help and just being able to control themselves. 212-209-2900, Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Effie. I'm very pleased to be able to ask you a question. I've struggled with impulsivity most of my life. I would say all of my life. I'm married, and I've had a successful relationship with my husband since 1975. He, too, is a very impulsive, very creative, and successful in many, many, many ways. But we've had children from our marriage. My son is struggling with attention deficit disorder and has been for many years. He's a young adult now. He's 25. I don't think that he has been able to make a full transition into adulthood because of his problems with, he went to special ed school.
How's his conduct behavior? Does he have defiant conduct behavior?
He used to. He has it less now, but he suffers from insomnia. And this is an issue that is very problematic. So problematic that basically we're kind of like from the old school where because of rental situation, we were able to rent one apartment in one floor, and we stayed close to my in-law who lives on another floor. But this he's moved down with my in-law and keeps her company. And this happened many years ago.
Well, let me cut to something and tell you there's some very fascinating new research. Now, Stephanie Domra, who's the head of our ADD division here at the DeMille Center, has been doing some research on what happens with imaging of people, because we say it's a behavioral disorder, it's a neurotic disorder. That's one possible consideration. What she finds in many cases, there are psychological factors, and now she's been hooking up with imaging studies where people look at the brains in motion of children like your son to see what's going on and to see it actually physically appearing on a screen, and they're learning there are hot spots that can be retrained. Now, what gets me and what excites me about what you're saying is that the insomnia is part of that. Easily, the amygdala is such a place that if it fires at random at night, it's going to create an insomnia. Most people who have waking dreams or panic dreams, that has to do with amygdalic activity.
Yes.
You know, so I would check a little further into that if I were you. There is a place, it is called the... What's the name of that center? Amen. A-M-E-N. I mean, of all things, the Amen Clinic. A-M-E-N.
Where is that located?
It's somewhere. It's in Virginia, Reston, Virginia. But, you know, I mean, it sounds like it's a trip away, but there are other resources and other places that they recommend. Or, you know, speak to Stephanie Domra here.
The funny part is that he kind of blames me because he says, well, I have a lot of the same things that you have, and he calls them the dirty genes.
Well, you know,
he gave me the dirty genes.
Well, it's kind of right. It's the MAOA, but you didn't give it to him. I mean, because when you don't give somebody genes, you know what I mean? But the genes could be part of your family. But
that's,
you
that's
don't
his
have
way of teasing me.
I know, but you don't have a conduct disorder, do you? Do you have a defiant conduct disorder? Do you go out confronting people? Are you very confrontational?
I used to be in a debate team. I guess... I don't think it's confrontational as much as it is exploratory, and, you know.
And I'm sure your husband, who is impulsive but successful, is not confrontational.
The interesting part is that he's successful, but he has a very poor concept of money. He's not interested in money. He really doesn't know how to charge people well for what he does. I think he's a very successful person in all ways, not monetary.
Yeah. I hear. So thank you for calling in. I hope this is helpful to you in some way.
It certainly is. Thank you.
Sure. You know, caring about your kids. It's an amazing... I learned a new amazing thing today. This is kind of fascinating. A couple I know is having a baby. And they both said, I want to have a baby girl. And they live in a community of friends, the friends of their own age, who are also pregnant. And in this group of people who are pregnant, seems like, you know, it's like there's like 10 couples who are pregnant in the neighborhood. It's a kind of a yuppie thing to do or something. And so they're pregnant, and they all want to have baby girls. Now, what happened was they found out that they're going to have a baby boy instead. And they found out through imaging, oh, it's going to be a boy. So now we have this new thing. The new phenomena is... people who want to have a baby girl who are having baby boys. Now, think about this. All through society, all through history, everybody always wanted to have a baby boy, right? And when they wound up with a baby girl, the girl was kind of, they were disappointed. And so the girl would become somewhat of a boy for her family. She was more likely, if the family wanted to have a boy, the girl became boy-like, like tomboyish. so that Dad and Mom would approve of her, and she felt somewhat guilty for disappointing them by being born female. Well, now the opposite's taken place. Why does every couple want to have a female? They want to have baby girls because women have taken their position in society where they are showing significant strength and they have significant power and they're no longer second-class citizens and, in fact, have less trouble, less defiant behaviors, better chance of getting through life, equal opportunities on so many levels. So parents are looking down and saying, what do I want to bring up, a boy who's going to be filled with testosterone or a girl who is going to be nice, right? And so parents have been electing and choosing to have baby girls. But now the interesting thing is, what happens to a boy when he's born when his parents really wanted a girl? One can only guess. Just interesting stuff we think about when we sit around here at the DeMille Center with a bunch of scientists who have nothing else to think about. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, this is Leora.
Hello, Leora. How are you?
Fine. I wanted to ask something. Could you do a quick review of this particular dorsal anterior frontal and the gene? And then my question is, what's the difference between impulsivity and intuition?
Well, okay, let me take both questions for you. The impulsivity versus spontaneity versus intuition. Impulsivity can turn into intuition, and intuition could be a part of an impulsive response if there is consideration of long-term goals. You could have an intuition, but it has consideration of long-term goals and the effects on other people. Impulsivity purely does not have that consideration. So in intuition, you could have a feeling about something and you may or may not move on it. Impulsivity always suggests a behavior. Now, as to where these are, the gene is called the MAOA gene. That's a new gene. You could look it up. And it is direct effect on the serotonin. And it is located, here we go again, where are we? It's in the frontal cortex. It's the dorsal anterior cingulate in the prefrontal cortex. And thanks, Leora. I knew somebody writes down all this stuff and pins it up on a 3x5 card and says we're going to learn that one today. But look it up. I think you're going to find some fascinating stuff. And thank you for calling.
Amen.
Yes, yes.
I'm asking, so if you do have this gene, if someone in my family has it, so what is the antidote?
I don't know. Aww. I don't know if there's an antidote to a gene, but there is some imaging that does help significantly with finding out what the location is. It probably could be medication. And awareness is a tremendous antidote right there, just being aware that you have this, being aware that you have an impulse control. You know, aware that you have an impulse disorder, being able to say to yourself over time, which, as I said, the work that this woman, Christine Ulrich, does, Dr. Christine Ulrich, she says, to be aware of your impulses doesn't mean you follow them anymore. Most people are not aware of them, so they just follow them automatically. All right? We got to be going. I was hoping to squeeze one more call in here. Michael, let's see if we can get one more fast shot just to say hello to somebody. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. Glad you got my call. This is Carla from New York City. I was wondering, you know, I'm aware of some of my impulses, and I get the idea with addiction like drugs, but I have certain things that I buy that I know I really just shouldn't buy, and they're little things, so they're easy enough to buy. And I think some, you know, I'm confused because an impulse seems like it's a one-off. But I think my impulses have become habits. So, you know, do you have any light on that?
Sure. Can you not do it? That'll give you your answer. See what it's like to go a week without doing it. By the way, what are the little objects that you like to buy?
I like to buy magazines. And I know that sounds so benign and innocent.
No, it's not benign.
It's not. It's not because it's a waste of money and space and time.
Yeah. I understand. But
and I mean, I wouldn't mind.
But it's information, and I'm sure you save the information.
Well, yeah.
And this becomes the beginning of something else that's another disorder that we have to talk about.
That's another day, right?
It's another day. We have to be going. What's your name?
Carla.
Carla?
Yeah.
Thank you for calling.
Thanks for calling. Or sure. Taking my call.
Thanks for me calling you.
Bye.
The one thing about impulse and lack of impulse control is it is at times joyous. I mean, there is such a spirit behind it. That's why the world needs it as well. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. With Roberta Atti, and we'll be talking about aggressiveness and impulsivity. And we will, you can look at the website, thepositivemind.com.
Change my long tone for a little short man. Change my number where I'm stopping at. Nobody wants you when you're old and gray. There'll be some changes made today. There'll be some changes made. Change in the weather, change in the sea. From now on there'll be a change in me. What will be different, my talk and my name? Nothing about me's gonna be the same. Change my long tone for a little short fast. Change my number where I'm stopping at. Nobody wants you when you're old and gray.